You're listening to Trust Me, You're Broke. I'm your host, Julia, a millennial consultant in banking, here to give you some tips and tricks on how to make, save, and grow your money. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. It's Julia, and I'm back at it again. If you're following this podcast and you wonder where the hell I went for the last 2 months, I'm sorry. I know I had a very long hiatus, but apparently there's a term for this general lack of productivity now, and it's called languishing if you're the one in two people that read the article in the New York Times. Spring really is the season for personal finances because it is the tax season for a lot of people. You know, you're reviewing your finances when you're filing your taxes as well, and you probably noticed, oops, I'm probably spending too much on XYZ. You may have noticed that you're owing taxes, or for this year, probably a lot of you guys are getting a tax refund back due to different COVID-19 measures like the $400 work from home tax credit. So of course I had to make a comeback and do some tips and tricks, and don't worry, I won't disappear for another 2 months again. I promise. So today, to get right into it, we're going to discuss everything that has to do with credit scores. I think in general, there's a little bit of a misunderstanding or lack of understanding when it comes to how credit scores work. What is really the use of credit scores? And so it ends up being kind of the most ignored part of managing your personal finances. When you think about managing your personal finances, a lot of people think save more, earn more, spend less, you know, and you'll have a better financial situation. But in reality, your use of credit is also a really important factor in establishing your creditworthiness or trustworthiness when it comes to presenting yourself at financial institutions like banks. In Canada, the credit score ranges from 300 to 900. 300 being poor and 900 being excellent. Now, the categorization in between 300 and 900 kind of differs a little bit, but it goes from like 300 to 560 or 500 is considered poor. 560 to 660 is considered fair. 660 to 725 is considered good, and 725 to 760 is considered very good, and 760 onwards is considered excellent. And this score that you have essentially tells lenders, so any type of loans, credit cards, any lender would see this number and determine how you have handled credit in the past. Because they're essentially lending you money or lending you credit, they want to make sure that you'll make your payments on time, right? So the higher the score, the more, I guess, reliable you are, the more you have demonstrated to other lenders in the past that you can handle credit and debt well. But you probably already picked this up from what I was just saying, but a lot of people consider credit cards, for example, a very slippery slope when it comes to building debt and building revolving credit card debt that's really hard to get out of. And they kind of speak to credit cards and having debt as like a very negative thing, but it actually can be a very positive tool. Because essentially, to have a number or have a credit rating in the first place, you need to have had experience dealing with credit. So if you don't have a credit card or you don't have any experience with loans or mortgages, etc., then there's no way of assessing how you deal with borrowed money. And so it's really hard then for a credit union specifically, to assign you a number. And what that does is actually that's a slippery slope, because down the line, when you really do need to borrow money for bigger purchases or when you need to apply for a credit card, it becomes really difficult for you to prove your credit worthiness. So when you use credit responsibly, obviously it shows that you are able to handle that amount of debt, and therefore you do get a higher credit rating. Now, it's really important to have a high credit score because, like I said, when it comes to big purchases, like you want to buy a house and you want to get a mortgage, your interest rate on that mortgage depends on your credit score. And now it does really depend on each institution and that year, you know, how is the economy doing? For instance, for coronavirus, we all know or you may know, that mortgage rates, interest rates have significantly gone down, at times sub 2%, which is kind of unheard of. It does depend on the economy, but really it does depend on your credit score as well. And according to Bankrate.com, it's just an example, but the difference between a 660 versus a 760 FICO score, or what we call credit score, it could be you paying, you know, if you're a 660, for example, you could be paying 3.34% interest rate on your mortgage or your loan, versus, let's say, if you have a 760, you might only be charged a 2.7% interest rate. And the difference in that, for example, could be around $20,000, assuming like a 200K house. So now it's really important to note that, you know, credit score is never just the only factor when it comes to lenders lending you money or credit. They also take a look at, you know, your employment, your general expenses, maybe how much you're planning on borrowing or asking to borrow, your current debt, for example. It's a holistic approach, but your credit score definitely has a huge impact in this deciding factor. And this is why we want to manage our credit score well. So that's really the background information I have for you when it comes to what a credit score is and why having a good credit score is really important. Now to the juicy part. I want to be fully transparent with you guys when it comes to credit scores and, you know, personal finances as much as possible, because I want to kind of debunk this myth and destigmatize talking about scores and finances. You know, everyone starts somewhere, and you don't have to have a excellent credit score rating. In fact, it's very, very, I can't stress this enough, it's incredibly difficult for you to have an excellent credit score, especially if you're a newcomer to Canada and you don't have a previous established credit history. And I'll explain to you later in the podcast what those factors are that make up a good credit score, but just know that if you don't have a good credit score right now, A, it's totally, you can improve it as much as you like, depending on how you use your credit and how you use your money. And there are just tips and tricks out there where you just simply need to do it and you're not aware of how to make that happen. But I'm here because I want to share my story with you guys. By the time I graduated university, which was in 2018, so what, 3 full years now ago, I graduated with a score of 620. Now, to remind you, that falls into the fair category of the credit score zones. So it's like one category up from poor. So obviously it wasn't the best credit score, but it wasn't the worst either. Now, at this point, I was able to successfully get a credit card, no problem. I had a credit card from university. That's what really helped me establish my credit score in the first place. So if you're someone that never had a credit score, if you're someone that never had a credit card, you will have no credit score. And that's the worst that you can do for yourself, is to not have a credit score, because when you try to rent, when you try to get a credit card, when you try to get a loan, every lender, someone who is doing a financial transaction with you, will want to see your credit score. So first and foremost, what's important is that you have one. Okay, so if you have one, congratulations. That's a good starting point. I just want to establish that, because, you know, I think we get really insecure about how low our credit scores could get, but really it's multiple factors, and some of them have nothing to do with really paying on time, or of course that's a huge factor, but some of them have nothing to do with how you're handling money, more so how long, for example, you have been handling credit. So don't be insecure about your score. If you have a score already, that's a good starting point. If you don't have a score already, find a way to get a credit card or a small line of credit or something as soon as possible. So back to my story. I had 620, and at this point, I had no problem getting a credit card. When I got my first postgraduate credit card, it was a Visa Infinite. which I don't know if you guys know, but there's regular Visa, there's Visa Premium, I think, and then there's Visa Infinite and Visa Infinite Privilege. And at, you know, Visa Infinite Privilege, I think your household income needs to be something cuckoo, like 400K or something. So it's a pretty highly rated card, right? Or a pretty premium card. And that also has to do with the fact that my salary right from the get-go was $60,000, which happened to be right at the cutoff of the Visa Infinite card. And I wanted to get that card because of travel perks and all of that. But so not a brag, you literally, like, it's not that, it's, the threshold's not that high, but what I want to illustrate here is that I was able to get that premium card with a 620 score. So my tip number one over here is, if you don't have a very high score right now, which, you know, back then I was at a 620, and you still want like a premium grade card, for example, because your income hits that mark, or whatever you want to, there's benefits or there's a shiny new offer on the market and you really want to take it, what I would recommend you do is go to the bank that you have been transacting with for the longest time, because they have all of your history. They have your credit history from when you were a student, for example, and they're actually, there's a adjudication, which is a fancy word for saying checking. There's a checking process where they can do it manually, so not just rely on system limitations and system criteria, but actually the supervisors can manually review your file and really determine if they are willing to take the risk on you. And the longer you were with a bank, the more they're willing to take that risk, because you are an existing client and they know how you have been treating your money and if you have been paying existing debt or existing credit on time. So even if your credit score is not very high, because your credit history is not very long, they are able to make those exceptions for you. So that's my number one tip. Now, obviously, it's not guaranteed. It's person to person. It's also by supervisor, by branch, by your bank. So I'm not saying this is like be all end all, this is how it's gonna work, but it's definitely worth trying, and you'll have your best shot with someone or with a bank or a lender that you've had the longest relationship with. Now, fast forward, I wasn't very happy with my credit score. At this point, I was already looking into, you know, what does a credit score actually mean? What are the deciding factors to giving me this number? You know, I didn't really like being judged by like one number, right? Going into a bank and they're like, oh, your score is low, so therefore we're gonna not give you certain products. I didn't wanna be in that position. And also, just so you guys know, like when you get a new phone, for example, from a telecom, they do credit checks as well. When you try to set up utility, they do credit checks as well. So credit scores are really important. And so I really wanted to work on that. And fast forward, I think a year later, I was actually able to become or get into the 700 zone. And today I'm at 750. And 750 is categorized as very good, or like I'm 10 away from excellent, I guess. But yeah, that's where I'm at. So I'm definitely not like a perfect credit score person, but also like I've never heard of someone with 900, first of all. That's number one. I've never heard of anyone with 900. Second, if you're listening and you have a higher credit score than me, then you're doing something great and good job. But I do want to say, like, again, there are so many factors that go into making up this credit score that I will introduce to you later. So it's not really all about like whether or not you're actually responsible financially. There's so many other factors out there. So that's just a little note there. If you have a better credit score than me, I celebrate you. Good job. I'm still a work in progress, but there are very clear steps that I took to go from a 620 to a 750, which could be a little bit difficult. So those are kind of the experiences that I want to share with you today. There's largely five factors that go into a credit score. And while you'll never see specifically what you got in those factors, they will kind of allude to some of the things that are on your file that could be negatively impacting your credit score. So while not super super specific, there are some key factors that you can look out for to really drastically improve your current credit score. And the biggest factor being payment history. And this is something that takes up around 35% of whatever your score is. So clearly it's the most important one that you have to care about. And payment history really basically looks at, did you make your payments on time? And there are, you know, obvious payments like your credit card bill, making sure that that's paid on time. But there's less clear payments that you also have to care about that is also tied to your credit file. And some of these examples are like your phone bills, for example, or any type of bill. If you are delinquent on the payments, they can actually file that as a report to the credit bureaus and let them know that you were delinquent on the payments. And that actually has a very negative impact on your credit score. Now, not only does the credit bureau record any delinquent payments that you had or any late payments that you had, it also records how late you were. So you could be 30, 60, or 90 days late. And depending on that, there's obviously a larger impact if you're even more late to making your payments on the credit bureau. And so the first and foremost thing that you need to kind of have a habit of is to pay your bills on time, and especially the most obvious one being your credit card bill. Now, this certainly happened to me, which was when I first got my credit card. I mean, and up until honestly very recently, the statement period and the billing period, what is the difference? You know, why is there a time gap in between the two? It was just getting really confusing as to when I had to pay the minimum amount on my credit card and when I had to pay the full amount in order to not get charged interest, and then when I was really going to be in trouble. So if you are curious about that timing distinction, you can go back to, I think, my previous episode where I talk about the different billing periods and when is the real last date for your credit card in order to not get that late payment status on your credit bureau. Because let's say you made a minimum payment on your credit card and you haven't made the full payment, then what's going to happen is the credit card company or your bank is going to start charging you interest. But that doesn't count as a late payment. So if you are interested in that timing, make sure you go back to my previous episode to find that out. But first and foremost, having a good understanding of that can really help you pay your bills on time. Another very quick way of doing so is if your bank allows you to do so, then you should set up automatic payments every month. I have, you know, multiple bank accounts, but one of the banks that I bank with is Scotiabank, and on their mobile app, there's a functionality to set up pre-authorized payments to my credit card, and it actually gives me an option of paying the minimum amount, paying a set amount, or paying the full amount. So right now what I have is paying the minimum amount, because that way I know for sure I'm never going to be delinquent or late on any payments, but it also doesn't tie me to necessarily paying my full amount every month just to manage my cash flow. And the second largest factor to your credit score, and is also my favorite factor because I think this is the one that really not a lot of people surprisingly know, it's called the utilization ratio. Now, that's just a fancy term of saying, of all of the credit that is available to you, how much of that are you using on a regular basis? So a very easy example is check out your credit card limit. That is the total credit that you have available to you. Now, if you have multiple credit cards, for example, then all of the credit limits combined would be your total credit available that's to you. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have a credit card and the credit card limit is $1,000, right? Then what is the general advice is, or a good practice is to keep your utilization ratio at under 30% of your total credit available. So that means if you have a credit card with a $1,000 limit, for example, it is generally best practice to each month not exceed $300 on that credit card. And this is really to show the financial institutions out there that although you have credit available, you don't need to max it out every month. month. And that shows that because you have liquidity, because you have cash, you don't need to lean on creating debt every month. And that actually strengthens your credit score. So while the first factor is the biggest factor, which is, you know, making sure that you are paying on time, you know, that might take some time to kind of readjust your credit score. Because if you already have a delinquent payment on file, for example, or if you already have a late payment, it's not like you can go back and reverse that, right? What's happened has already happened. So you can only hope that in the future, you change a little bit of your habit to make sure that you're not late on your payments. But for the second factor, it's really the trick that I use to make sure, you know, if I need to present my credit score somewhere. So for example, if I need to show a landlord that I'm credible and I want my credit score to be a little, you know, better, or if I want to, I don't know, get a mortgage, for example, credit score is very important. If I want to kind of increase that credit score in the short run, the tip that I like to use the most is to check, firstly, my utilization ratio. Do I have the ability to pay off some of this, you know, credit card bill that I have right now to lower my total credit utilization ratio? Or another option that you can go with is to increase your credit limit. So when I first got a credit card, I was a student, and on top of that, I was an international student. So for like the first, I guess, 5 years, like even including the first year out of school and having my full-time job, I think my total credit score was like, my credit availability, my credit limit was like $1,000. It was something like kind of ridiculously low. And I just slowly realized that that was not going to work for me for a variety of reasons. Number one being, if I wanted to fly home, for example, it would be more than $1,000 right then and there. And I didn't want to put myself in a situation where I was overloading the card, because if I do that, then, you know, that means my credit utilization is like more than 100%. And that would be really detrimental to my credit score. And this is something that I really misunderstood actually when I was a student. So if you're doing this, then I hope that you can learn from my mistakes. I always had an impression, and I don't know where I got this incorrect impression, but I had the impression that, you know, the longer or the more you showed the banks that you were transacting and then paying back on time, the more you showed that, the better your credit score would be. So what I would tell my dad, for example, when I was still in school and trying to go back home for the summer, is I would be like, Dad, don't pay from your credit card. Let me pay from my credit card. Just, you know, send me some cash and then I will pay back my credit card with your cash. And thinking, you know, oh my God, you know, I'm showing the financial institution that I'm responsible. I can make a payment like this and pay it back right away, right? But I was so wrong, because what I was doing was, at that time, my credit limit was only $1,000 and my ticket was like $1,300. So I would take $1,300 in cash, pay it before I spent it. And that way, if you didn't know this, right? And if you need to use more limit than your credit limit, what you do is you pay the bill beforehand, and that actually increases your credit limit. So what I did was I paid, I think, $300 more, and that increased my credit limit to $1,300, and then I swiped my card to buy a ticket. And what that meant was that every single time I was exceeding my original limit of $1,000. And so I guess to the credit bureaus, that was like a big no-no, because it's like, why is she every quarter or something, or like every half a year, why is she spending so much money beyond her credit limit? That's like the worst thing that you can do. So if you have been doing that, thinking, oh, the more I use my credit card, the better it is, that's not necessarily true. So make sure you, hopefully you can learn from my mistakes in that sense. And I think that was probably the single biggest contributor to my really low credit score coming out of university. I think I was in this, I'm not going to say really low, because I don't want to shame anyone who has a credit score in their like low 600s. It's actually really normal, and especially normal for younger people because of the third factor that I'm about to talk about. But yeah, when I came out of university, I was at like low 600s, and I had friends who were also international babies who had like a credit score that was like you know, on in the 800s. So I was like, okay, I must be doing something wrong. And looking back, that type of expenditure of buying a ticket, you know, that exceeded my credit limit, I think definitely heavily contributed to my low credit score. So if you feel like inevitably because of your lifestyle, because I don't know, you know, flying somewhere maybe is less relevant these days, but maybe you're someone like me, you have family abroad and you have to go on a regular basis. And so you have to spend big money on your credit card because, you know, buying a plane ticket, you can't buy it off a debit card, for example. Then that's okay. That is your lifestyle, your life, but you just need to make sure that then you find a way to increase your credit limit so that your total credit utilization ratio goes down. So two ways I did this was A, I got a new credit card that gave me cash back. And this one, I think I still to this day keep it at the $1,000 credit limit. The reason why I do that is because I knew that I was barely going to ever use this credit card. I literally just got it for the sake of having a total higher credit limit. But also when I got the opportunity from my bank to increase my main credit card to a higher credit limit, I took it because that's the easiest way that you can lower your credit utilization ratio. Now, one caveat about getting a new credit card for the sake of increasing your total credit limit is that just be aware that every time you get a new credit product, so every time you get a new credit card, for example, in the application process, what they do is they do a thing called a credit check. So they basically dial up your credit bureau and see what your credit score is to determine what limit you're going to get, what type of product you're eligible to get, etc. But every time they do that, it's called a hard check, a hard credit check. And what that means is for every hard credit check, for some reason, guys, I don't work for the credit union, credit bureau, so I have no idea why this is such a negative thing. But I guess it's because it indicates that you're, you know, looking for a loan, looking to borrow. But every time a bank or anywhere does a hard credit check, it actually lowers your credit score a little bit. It's usually pretty temporary, but this is why you can't just go there and be like, please open up 7 credit cards for me, because there's going to be 7 hard checks on your file. And that actually negatively impacts your credit score. And you don't want to do that, right? It has to be kind of a happy balance of I'm getting this and I'm willing to take a temporary hit for the long-term benefit of lowering my credit utilization ratio, but also not opening up so many at the same time that your credit score is going to drop anyway. Also, another thing about credit limits and increasing your credit limits, I mentioned this in my previous episodes as well, is that I also was a victim of fraud right after I increased my credit limit to $10,000. So, I mean, you know, there's always risk to that. I got my money back, by the way, and it was like very, very seamless process. Shout out to my bank. Yeah, that's also an inevitable risk, right? Because if you have a credit limit of $1,000, then the maximum a fraudster can really take out of your credit card is $1,000 or swipe on your credit card. Whereas, you know, if you have a credit limit of $10,000, then, you know, the maximum that they can swipe is $10,000. So obviously the amount increases, but I wouldn't be too concerned about that. Like, I think it's pretty common that people have credit limits that are 10K and above, especially if you're local here or if you've demonstrated a good credit history with a good pay. It's pretty common. So I wouldn't say like it's totally risk-taking to increase your credit limits, a very common strategy. Now, on to the third factor, and this is the factor that I really hope after you hear, like, if you have credit score guilt, as in you look at your credit score and you're like, where did I go wrong? Or you're very confused. Like, I hope this third biggest factor really makes you feel better. This one takes around 10% of your entire credit score, and it's your credit history. What does that mean? That means if you'd had a credit score or a credit history, so you had a credit card for a long time, the longer period you had, the higher score you would have. And that's because you've demonstrated for a long longer period of time to the bank that you are a credible lender, or I guess you're not a lender, you're borrowing, you're a credible borrower. Oh my God, I can't English anymore. The longer you show that you're credible, the more they will hike up your score, right? So what does that mean? That means it is inevitable for younger people to have a lower credit score than an older, you know, wiser client out there, because you're younger and you have a younger credit history. But what's really important about this portion is that, let's say credit card number one, you have 5 years of history, right? You started when you were 18 and now you're, I don't know, 23, let's say, and you had 5 years of history, and you're like, okay, that's great, right? Now, every time you get a new credit product, so not just, I'm using credit card as an example here, but it could be even a loan, etc. So let's say you get a new credit card today. What happens is that they take the average of the two, and that becomes your new credit history length. So it's 0 years old versus 5 years old. So then you have a happy medium of 2.5 years. So that actually shortens temporarily, but it shortens your total credit history or credit length. So that's also something that you need to consider when you get a new credit product. Now, if you are a parent out there who's listening, like a young parent, or maybe you're planning on having a child sometime in the future, just one quick fun tip. I think it's not really fitting for the demographic from what I'm seeing, but if you do plan on having children in the future in Canada or even in the States, one good tip to remember is if you can help your child establish a joint account, so your name is also on it, but your child's name is also on it, and you issue a credit card in their name. So it's still your credit card, but they're the secondary card holder, for example. And, you know, whether or not you actually want to give the child the credit card, that's your personal choice. But all I'm saying is, from a just a mechanical perspective, if you do that from as young as possible for them, what that means is by the time they're 18, let's say, you know, they were 0 years old when you put them as a secondary card holder, they would have had 18 years of credit history without ever touching a credit card. So that actually really sets them up for success when they're, you know, going into their adulthood, because their credit score will be perfect, right? So that's just one way to set someone up for success. But I know, like, someone like me, for example, you know, I'm technically, I guess, a first gen immigrant here. I wouldn't have had any type of credit history. So, you know, it's inevitable for people like me to have a very short credit history compared to someone who was, you know, born and raised here. So if you're, you know, planning on starting a family of your own, then that's just one little good tip to have in mind to set your children up for success, I guess. Now, the last 10-ish percent really looks at the type of credits that you have. What does this mean? This means if you have a really good mix of credit. So for example, you have a loan that you're paying off regularly, you have credit cards, you have a mortgage, you have a line of credit, like you have a good mix of loans or debt, then that's actually, for some reason, a good thing. But because this factor is so small, I wouldn't recommend going and getting a loan just for, you know, improving your mix of credit. That's, you know, you shouldn't really do that, because it's not really going to impact your score much anyway. So I would just focus on, you know, the biggest contributing factors to your credit score. So recap, some quick things that you can do to really improve your credit score. Number one, when you're looking for a credit card, when you are looking for a mortgage, there's something called rate shopping that a lot of people like to do. What does that mean? That is, you know, you apply for one credit card and then you go to another bank to do some shopping to see if you can get a better deal. So you inquire about another credit card, but every single time you make those inquiries, there is a hard hit to your credit bureau. And you don't want that hard hit, because it's going to lower your credit score every time. So that's number one. Number two, within a 12-month period, try not to open too many new accounts, because again, that will lower the average age of your credit, history. So you don't want to do that. Number three is if you want to quickly lower your credit utilization ratio because there are inevitable, you know, payments or shopping or purchases that you have to make on your credit card, such as buying a plane ticket home, for example, then one very quick way to do that without a hard-hitting credit check is to ask your bank if they can increase your credit limit on one credit card for you. And if that fails, then consider getting another credit card to increase your credit utilization ratio, with the caveat in mind that A, if you open a new credit account, then your total age will go down. And also they will do a hard credit check when they're opening that account. So, you know, if you've had to get a loan recently, or if you really, you know, you're like under 5 years of history, I would say don't go with option two. Try and increase your credit limit on your existing account as much as possible. But if all else, that's also a good idea to get a new credit card. And of course, it goes without saying, make sure you are making your payments on time and in full when you can, or as soon as you can. And secondly, if you have a loan, an existing open loan, pay it off as soon as possible. Don't worry about saving. Okay, the first and foremost thing that you should do is to pay off your loan so that your entire credit utilization ratio lowers, and also paying off your loan is a really, really great way to increase your credit score. Not to mention, you know, you don't want to be paying interest when you have the money to pay it off. That's also just a good practice. And then the second good practice is to make sure that your credit utilization ratio, how much you're using compared to your credit limit, is kept to under 30%. That is like the best practice that you can have. Just to make sure that you can maintain a great glowing credit score. And I'm going to end it here by saying kind of something that I realized recently, because I have been looking at new places to move to. And one thing that landlords check, of course, is your credit score. And one very interesting thing because of the pandemic is that rent prices in large metropolitan cities have actually gone down, which hurrah for renters like me. But also one interesting thing about the climate now is that when you're applying for a new place to rent at, for example, landlords are now more picky. So although rent has gone down, the qualifications that landlords are looking for is a lot more picky, because they want to make sure they can get a stable tenant who can make their payments on time, right? And the best way that you can stand out is obviously to have a healthy credit score. That's just a little quick commentary on what's happening in the world today and why credit scores can be really, really important in helping you get what you're looking for. So that's all for today. Thank you so much for waiting so patiently. If you have been waiting and wondering where the hell I went, I am healthy. I'm good. I'm just, you know, as everyone is saying now, I'm languishing, but it's okay. I'm, you know, hanging in there. And I really hope that this episode was jam-packed with information so that we can all aim for a 900 credit score. And with that, I'll chat with you next week. Hope today's episode was informative and fun. If you like this episode, please give my podcast a like, a 5-star review, and a follow. Also, go follow me at Wealth by Julia on Instagram for more tips and tricks. I'll talk to you soon.